You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
But along with the seven I Ams, John also records seven miracles. He turns water into wine. He heals that royal official's son from a distance when he's up in, son is in Capernaum, and he walks up to Cana, which is about a seven-hour walk up the hill, and Jesus says, your son is healed, okay? He raises that paralytic that's by the pool, the Bethesda pool, and he then feeds the 5,000. He walks on water. He heals the blind man born blind, in chapter 9. He raises Lazarus from the dead, okay? Now, John's appealing to his Jewish audience here. This is what Jesus does. Turns water into wine. Yeah, I can take ordinary people and turn them into extraordinary individuals. He can touch me even when I feel far away from him. He's healing at a distance. The guy's laying there, crippled by the pool, and he can't get to it when the water stirs, and he's not even looking for Jesus. And Jesus comes up to him and says, you want to be healed? So even when I'm not looking for God, God's looking for me. That's an incredible image for me, an incredible thought.
I know you've brought that up before.
Okay. He feeds 5,000. His provision for me is limitless. Rhett, his provision for you is limitless. Does that word have significance for you this morning?
Yeah.
It does for me, too.
Yeah.
I'm in need of his provision right now in a number of areas.
Yeah, me too.
And I think probably you are too.
And it's a good way to be needful of God.
It is, okay. And then he's walking on water. I can do with him, I can do impossible things. And you and I both, we have done impossible things with him. Look at your career and the things that you've told me where you started out, that God has allowed you to do things and put you in positions. You've talked to some of the most famous people of our time.
Yeah.
Now, how does that happen to a guy that grew up the way that you did, right?
I was living in the ghetto of Troy, New York.
Exactly.
High school dropout. I mean, I was thinking about that last night. How did you ever take this nobody? Why did you choose this nobody?
Well, with him, I can do impossible things.
Yeah.
Okay.
To God be the glory.
Yeah. When he heals the blind man born blind, okay. Where I am blind, he can open my eyes to see.
Yeah.
And that's happened so many times where I am totally clueless about what's going on around me, with the relationship that I'm in, the conversation I'm in, the situation. And all of a sudden, illumination. I get wisdom. I'm able to see. You know, and of course, when he raises Lazarus from the dead, he raised Lazarus. He's going to raise me. You know, Jesus said, God has given them to me. There's not one that of my sheep that I will lose. And I myself will raise them up on the last day.
But was he referring to the disciples there?
No, he's referring to us.
Are you certain?
Yes, it's one of my great promises, Rhett. And he then, after saying that, he raises Lazarus up, and everybody's watching. They know Lazarus has been in the tomb for 4 days. Yeah. His sisters say, oh, the odor from his decomposing body is going to be dangerous. Don't go in.
Yeah.
Remove the rock. Lazarus, come forth.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if we were standing there? What would we be thinking? With this guy, everything he said is true. And he raised Lazarus from the dead. He's going to raise me from the dead.
Yeah.
Okay? So, you see, John is living in Ephesus. He's got a mixed audience of Greco-Romans and Jews that live in the city. He's writing his gospel. He's trying to present Jesus in a way that the Jews are going to understand. Functional thinking. This is what he does. But his Greek audience, form thinking. He's giving this image, the door, the shepherd, the way, the truth, the life, the resurrection. You know, I mean, these are great images.
Yeah.
And if we understand how Jews and Greeks think, then these images, I think, really come alive. They really come alive, okay? Now, another distinct difference in these two cultures, Jewish culture and Greco-Roman culture, is what I call and what my friend Randy Smith has often referred to as acceptance and obedience versus speculation and application. You see, the rabbis taught that it was the duty of God's people to accept the revelation that God has given them and then simply obey. They saw the pillar of fire and smoke on Mount Sinai. It was God. As to what was above that pillar of smoke, they not only did they not know, but they didn't feel they had the right to even speculate what was going on above that pillar of fire. They didn't have the right to speculate on God and his attributes and who he was. To the Jewish mind, God tells us what we should do. We obey. It's that simple. But Greeks are different. They have a thing called logic in their culture. And even today, Greek culture is that way. Remember, these are the inventors of geometry, right? Mm. If we know
Does that pillar begin? Where does it end?
Exactly. Okay, I want you to follow the thinking here, okay? Mm. So we know if A is greater than B and B is less than C, we can figure out the relationship between B and C, okay? Greek thinkers believe that if they know some things about God, they can apply their logic and figure out the rest. You see the difference between the two? Jews said, we receive God's revelation, we obey. The Greeks go, well, we see this a little bit about God, we can figure out the rest of him, all right? So when Greek-thinking people came into the church in large numbers in the second century, theology was born. This is the speculation of who God is, what he's really saying, and how we are to respond at this point in time. Jews never really developed a theology of God. They didn't feel they had the right to do that. But what you see in early church history, especially through the 3rd and the 6th century, we see councils, we see schisms, we see excommunications, because applying logic to God often had disastrous results, okay? When Constantine called all the bishops together and at Nicaea in the 4th century, there were many survivors of the persecution under the last Roman emperor in the, I think it was 280 to 290 Domitian. Severe persecution. And many of those that survived that were present at, and they were having dinner with the emperor. And it was said that during that dinner that Constantine actually went over to one of those bishops who had lost his eye in that persecution through torture and actually leaned over and kissed him on where the face where that eye used to be. I mean, these bishops couldn't believe that, you know, years before the emperor was after them and killing them, and now they're having dinner with the emperor. They began their meetings at this council with as trying to establish official church doctrines, but they couldn't agree, and many of them wanted to excommunicate one another. Because they all agreed that the scriptures were inerrant, but many believed inerrancy applied only to their logical interpretation of the scriptures. And finally, Constantine had to force them to come to some agreement because this was the result of their speculation and their application. This is my friend Randy Smith calls it, this is the time when the church went through the Greek car wash and everything changed. There was an effort on some of the Christians from Alexandria to move away from their Jewish roots during this time to a more philosophy approach to the Bible. And this is where the Hebrew scriptures began to be viewed as allegories. And there was one bishop named Marcion that really eliminated all the Hebrew books in the Bible that had any, in the Christian scriptures, any of the quotes of the Jewish prophets. He eliminated that, and finally Marcion was left with a Bible that only contained the letters of Paul and some of Luke's gospel. And this eventually got carried on into 18th and 19th century theology in some German schools. So There's a difference between acceptance and obedience and speculation and application. This is how the church changed its character. There's a third distinction called tribal mentality versus individual thinking. See, Jews were in an environment where they understood the collective, the good of the many over the individual, the good of the one. They thought of themselves first as family members, then as members of their extended clan, then members of the 12 tribes, then members of the nation of Israel.
So they survived by being tribal.
Right, they're very tribal. And so, for example, the mentality was what was best for the group is what's best for me.
Moish, you're going to make the shoes. I'm going to open up the jewelry store.
Well, thus the king could offer tax exemption to the families of the sappers. Remember, those were the guys that crawled under the walls of the cities of the enemies, and they used
picks. Sacrificing their very own lives.
They used picks to try to knock the sewer pipes down to get the walls collapsed, and they probably were going to die in this mission, but they knew that their families were going to live tax-free for the rest of their lives. Now, imagine you and I lived tax-free. Imagine you and I lived tax-free for the rest of our lives. That would be a good thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but I still wouldn't want my family member to die for it.
But this was their mentality.
Yeah.
This was what's good for what's good for my family is good for me. Okay? But Greeks are very different. They're individual thinkers. Remember, their dramas and their literature often portrayed the lone hero who overcame great odds or fell prey to the schemes of the gods or his own failings. The importance of the individual in Greek culture gave rise to a unique form of government, democracy, right? Where individuals had the right to be the rulers of the city. And these concepts, democratic concepts, didn't really apply to Jewish culture.
Mm.
Okay? So a theme of Paul's letters as he's talking to his Greek-thinking friends, he talks a lot about the concept of the body of Christ. Have you noticed that in his epistles? Mm-hmm. That we're all parts of a body. We each have a function to play.
Some of the hands, some of the feet, some of the nose.
He didn't have to tell this to his Jewish friends. He's telling it to his Greek and Romans friends.
Yeah, they get it. They survived by having a syndication.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for New Day with Rhett Palmer.
We'd like to thank Center for Advanced Eye Care, Dr. Mallon. Center for Advanced Eye Care with offices in Fort Pierce and in Vero Beach. Thank you for supporting. It's a new day. God was slain.